Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Thursday morning here at Ignite. I'm Brian Hooper. I'm the Senior Director of IT Restaurant Operation for Bloomin Brands. You're probably asking yourself, so what is Bloomin Brands? We are a family of restaurant concepts. We're best known for our Outback brand. We also have Carrabba's and Bonefish. Those are our casual dining restaurants. And then we also have Fleming's, which is our fine dining restaurant. So you're probably thinking to yourself, what does a restaurant company really have to do in the technology space with something like Microsoft Azure? I mean, our business model seems pretty simple. Serve really good food with great hospitality and get rewarded for that. And for us, we really see technology as an opportunity to elevate the dining experience, and that digital is really a new type of hospitality for our guests. So in today's presentation, I'm just going to kind of take you through our approach, how we view Azure. And I think it's really important when you're coming to Azure because it's kind of like a giant pantry. There's a whole bunch of options, and if you don't know what you want to approach and what you want to get out of it, you can end up with kind of a mess. So it's the difference between coming at it as a chef versus my 7-year-old, and you end up with something that you really don't want. Then I'm going to talk about the benefits that we've seen by the way that we approach Azure. And then the next two pieces is kind of our real-world examples of how, by taking the approach that we have, we were able to successfully build a new digital platform and have some real marketing wins from that we could only have done with Azure. And then last, I'm going to leave with some lessons that we've learned in the 4 to 5 years that we've been on Azure. So at Bloomin Brands, we view Azure as an agility platform, and that's one of those marketing sounding things that you're like, that you're in keynotes and you're like, what does that really mean? And for me, it really means two things. One of which is, because we have all these great tools and products at our fingertips, we can experiment and learn and try things very quickly. Much more quickly than if we had to buy software, bring it in. And then the other thing at least that is that we can actually scale our solutions that we build to match the needs of our business. So if we need to do things quickly, we can bring things on. If our business changes, we can get rid of things as the business evolves. For us as an organization, we only build for cloud for new things. And we prefer platform as a service over IaaS. This is one of those kind of lifestyle choices that you kind of have to think through. And for us, it makes sense because we want time to market. So we look through all of the great services that are in Azure, and that's how we compose solutions. And I challenge anyone to not be able to find a business solution that you can't build out of all the parts that they have in Azure, especially today. And with that, we look at how much things cost as we're building out that solution because we're looking at total cost of ownership. So we tend to favor things that are shared services, API management, service bus, because we can get really good performance at a very, very low cost. Now there's a catch to that, and that's the trade-off between a PaaS and an IaaS lifestyle. I can't easily take my solutions to another cloud without some changes. It's also hard to bring things back on premises. That's getting better with some of the new things that they've announced here at Ignite. But the reality of the situation is it gets hard trying to put those things into practice. A great example that we've used a lot of is Service Bus. It's really easy through Azure Pack to create Service Bus on your laptop to do some testing stuff. But if you look what goes into having to really do that at a production scale with the sort of SLAs that Microsoft gives you, it's not for the faint of heart. So for us, it makes a lot of sense to do that, and we're comfortable with that. So that's one of those things you just have to, that's why you need to go in with kind of a perspective on that. And for us, we believe that on-premises is legacy debt that we need to eliminate. And the reason for that is on-premises is kind of the opposite of agility. You have a fixed constrained amount of compute. You have things that you've put capital investments in. So if the project doesn't pan out, you're still kind of attached to it. And when it comes to scaling things, especially consumer-facing things, no matter how good you think you are, you're either going to get a lot of excess scale, or one day you're going to find that your virtualized scaling, you've fallen off the end of your blade and you don't have more compute at your disposal. And with that, for us as a restaurant company, there's not a lot of business value in being really good at managing a data center. It's not. We're not in the compute business. We're in the hospitality business. And Microsoft has a great reason to be really good at that. So our general experience has been that our availability uptime is as good or better than we have in our data center. So with that, the solutions that we really kind of use today, and where we actually started our journey, was actually in our public websites. And it's not because we were brilliant and saw the cloud future. It was a case that Azure in its early days was very focused on developer self-service. And we as an organization had a very young IT organization, so developers and self-service came together, and that's how our public website started out on the web, or in Azure. So, but with that, we took that immature approach that we started with, and we kept getting better and more refined at it, and we leaned into it. Because in the restaurant space, we tends to be a Microsoft-centric stack in the solutions that we have anyway, so it really made sense for us. And then really, I think our moonshot step was really when we went into our mobile app space, which is the first thing that we built, leaning into all the great things that Azure has to offer. And then as we saw success with that, we started bringing that into our corporate enterprise spaces. So we created an enterprise API stack that represents all of our services that we want to offer, and we keep growing that. And we build that around API management to give us abstraction. And then we use Service Bus. All of the restaurant data that comes to and from the restaurant, sales, employee data, all that travels through Azure Service Bus. And with that, we're also bringing our line of business apps out to Azure. And one of the nice things about that is line of business apps have a way that as they get older over time, you don't notice that people stopped using them. So it makes it much easier to spin those things down as the business needs evolve. So you say you use Azure. Well, what does that mean? So this is how we actually use Azure. We have 32 million page views a month across all of our public websites. We manage to do 238 million calls to API management. And, you know, we use a production premium instance of API management. It costs $2,400 a month. That's a lot of service for that low of price. I challenge you to go buy something like Apigee, host that yourself and do that. You just can't do it. And that's where that commodity aspect comes into play. We process almost 1.8 billion messages through Service Bus a month. I think my Service Bus bill for actual Service Bus is maybe $1,500. I mean, it's incredibly great value. It's a great service with a huge amount of availability and scalability that we could not even begin to approach to host ourselves. And we have a fairly good number of cloud service instances. We like PaaS, so we built heavily around the cloud service model. And then lastly, which is the thing we're kind of wimpy in, is storage. And that really comes down to how we saw our journey. So you go to these things where they talk about big data this, big data that, and it's kind of the assumption that you have all this data lying around. Well, we do have some data lying around, but for us, we really didn't have the channels to really interact with our guests to really leverage that data. So we started our journey by building out our websites and our e-commerce platforms, by adding our mobile data. So we created the channels to get the data in, and then we used API management to create a service control gateway so that we had a centralized part with APIs for all our data to come into. So now we kind of funneled all the data into a river. And now we're working with the Azure team to start creating a data lake to actually tap that and then be able to push the insights that we get back through the channel. So we kind of complete the whole circle as an organization. So the benefits that we see by the approach that we've taken, which is a very PaaS-oriented approach, is we get rapid innovation. So we're able to very easily go, we want a solution that's kind of like this. Let's go through the Azure service catalog and figure out which things might be good fits for that, work with the Azure team, and build out a solution end to end. And we can do that very quickly. And the great thing is there's good documentation around the products and services. And actually, Microsoft's really good at evolving that documentation based off of consumer feedback. A great example for us, we had some challenges in our very first implementations of Service Bus. And the product team went, hey, can we see your code, what you're doing? And they look at our code and they're like, why are you making all these message calls? Anyone who uses TIBCO from a TIBCO background would know not to do this. I'm like, we've never had a messaging platform before. We're a cloud company. Oh. And so they went and pulled up their product documentation and went, ooh, we kind of led you down the wrong path. Our bad. And they changed the product documentation so we could all kind of share and go, oh, that's, be careful of this, not this. So very responsive in that. And the nice thing also that goes with that is immediate deployment. So if you have an idea, there's no waiting for contracting. There's no waiting for someone to go get a piece of hardware. Because in our office, someone's going to do a purchase order, which then gets turned into an order, which then goes to CDW, which then ends up in the data center, and then someone's got to install it. You skip all that. And then with that, you get simple administration. You've got the point-and-click aspects that you have with the portal, but you also, which is what we're starting to evolve into, is infrastructure as code, which is great because now you can actually see how your environments are changing using things that we classically use in the source code space. And then you've got the wonders that platform as a service takes a lot of the complexity out of life. And my favorite example is SQL Azure. SQL Azure gives me all the goodness of SQL Server, but I don't have to worry about some of those less pleasant things, like creating the right file mounts and getting all those little detailed settings just right. And a lot of the criticisms that you'll hear from people about using PaaS is, well, I don't get to turn all the knobs. In my career, I've generally found turning the knobs is what gets us in trouble. So I kind of view not having the knobs is generally a feature. And then with that, we get performance. Elastic scaling, everyone talks about elasticity. That's one of the big reasons about cloud. Well, a lot of the solutions that Azure has to offer in this PaaS space, they scale out of the box. So you never worry about falling off the end of the blade, even in a virtualized environment. And let's be realistic, even when you buy virtualized space in the data center so that you have leftover, what happens is that leftover sits around, and people start saying, oh, we'll never get, they start slowly carving into your reserve capacity. So that when you actually need it, it's not there anymore. One of the things, autoscale is helpful, but autoscale is not designed to be your go-to. You need to plan for your capacity, and autoscale is there to help you. And for us, it works really well because our traffic loads are very calendar-based. Valentine's Day is a huge day for us, so we scale in advance for that. If we're going to do a promotion, we have some advance notice of that. So autoscale is there to help you when someone catches you off guard, but you're much better off to plan for what your scaling needs are. And one of the great things is if you're adding a new capability, which for us, mobile was a new capability, your best guess of who's going to use things when is really that. It's your best guess. Because you've never done it before. So you take your best guess, you scale bigger than that, and then as you see your usage pattern, you can start scaling into what's the right size. And that's really powerful. And then redundancy. Out of the box, many of the solutions have redundant features. You have things like geo-redundant storage. We use premium API management that has redundancy in it. It's just out of the box. You don't have to think about it. So it gives you great opportunities to create highly available systems with the pieces and parts that you have. For us, anything that we have that's consumer-facing, we run hot-warm. So we run in two different Azure locations, and we use things like Traffic Manager to be able to do that successfully. And one of the big booms of Azure, in my opinion, is being able to do a production-scale performance test. Because on-prem, no one ever wants to spend the money to have a hardware environment that looks like the production environment. They say they do, and then you hand them the bill, and the CIO goes, so, if we do half the size, is that okay? With Azure, you can actually produce it, and because you're only going to use it for a while, people don't complain about the cost. They much rather not be embarrassed when things go south. So with that, you pay for what you use. The economics of Azure is very compelling. If you approach it from an economic standpoint, because a lot of things you hear is cloud's expensive. Well, cloud is expensive if you try to replicate your data center exactly the way that you did before. if you think differently and you think about the cloud, then you have the opportunity for economic benefits. You pay for what you use, so you're not having that excess capacity sitting idle. You can get rid of your production and dev environments, only pay for storage when you're not using them. Because, you know, people aren't testing and devving all day long and all night long. And then you have opportunities for lower costs and those multi-tenant services where you can get a lot of development value and business value without a lot of cost. And we've kind of looked at the cost differential between like compute on-premises versus in Azure. And on the compute, storage is, you know, it's hands down much cheaper in Azure, but compute, what you find is the cost is about the same, but I'm not paying for a data center to put it in, the power, the administrative costs, and the fact that the thing that I have in the data center is getting obsolete, and Microsoft keeps refreshing those servers on their dime. So that's a great win that just kind of happens naturally. And my favorite part of Azure is never having to say you're sorry. So how many people in the audience have bought a new piece of hardware or software for a solution, and the solution never goes to production? Or you sized it wrong and it's way too big? Or better yet, you size it wrong and you get to buy it again. I'm sure everyone has had that happen. That's something you don't have happen in Azure. If you size it wrong, you scale it differently. And sometimes, because we're now innovating so quickly, sometimes our great ideas don't always pan out. If you're doing it, if you're innovating rapidly, you're going to have some losers. If you don't have losers, then you're probably not innovating very quickly. And Azure, you go, it didn't work out. You turn it off. The money stops. You do that on something where you've bought software and hardware, you're going to have an uncomfortable conversation with your VP of finance going, I need to take a write-off. Things you never want to tell anyone in leadership. It's time for a write-off. No one has ever given me an award for that. So let's try to talk about how we actually practically use these things. And for us, really, our big foray into that was our connected customer. That's what we internally call our mobile app for our consumers. And that kind of started because we started a digital customer journey with our digital team. So we have a team who's dedicated to our consumer space. And they did a bunch of research. And the research was actually kind of surprising. Because we had been test marketing things like tabletop payment devices. I'm sure you've seen them in other restaurants. And what we found is our guests are like, we're not really keen on those. Because we come to casual dining because we want service. If we didn't want service, we'd go down to Chipotle. They have great quality food. But you get in line, you get your food, and you go. Casual dining is as much about engaging with your server, sitting down, and really having that meal experience. So, but what they did say is there's part of the whole flow that we don't like. The first one is we don't like waiting in line. Who's ever gone, my favorite part of going out to dinner on Friday night is the wait. No one. And the other flip side is, so I've been done eating for 10 minutes and I need the check. Better yet, the kids are starting to melt down and I need to go. I mean, I'm as guilty as anyone else where it's like, okay, kids, we've been here for 20 minutes, go free. So those were the pain points that our customers had really kind of said, these are things that you could make with technology better. So we thought about, what's the ultimate personal engagement device? We went, hey, it's a mobile phone. Everyone's got them. It's your own personal device, your own personal experience. So that's how we decided to approach those two core problems. And one of the big things we were very careful about is we made sure to just solve those problems. So help me not wait. Let me browse the menu while I'm waiting. Let me pay the check. And we now have a loyalty program. Let me get rewarded for that. And a lot of the folks in the field created these Swiss Army knife apps. I can pay, I can order, I can do this, I can do that. They're so complicated that people don't actually use them. They use them once and they throw them away. And one of the things that's very unique to us is one of our big parts of our culture is that we are a company that that owns restaurant companies. We're not in the restaurant business. We own a family of unique founder-inspired concepts. So it's very important that we be able to express that in each version of our apps across our different brands. So this is kind of the features that we went for. So you can find locations near you. You get on the wait list so that you don't actually have to wait at the restaurant. Whenever you get on property, we'll let you check in if you have location services turned on, so you don't have to actually go wade through the crowd, go up to the host or hostess and get checked in. And when your table's ready, we push notify you. It's kind of interesting. We've gotten feedback from young families that they don't even actually go into the restaurant until they get the push notification. They'll stay in the car, let the kids play with tablets, do whatever, and it's a much better experience for them. It encourages them to come out more. We let our guests browse our menus, payments. We let folks securely pay with credit card, gift card. We support split checks, which is great for lunch because that's a part of our business we're trying to grow. And we also recommend appropriate tip. And there was a lot of excitement and consternation about that piece because tips are what really help support our servers. That's what they work for. And if the app, if they didn't feel that the app gave them good tips, they would circumvent the app. So if we want a good app adoption, we had to make sure that we had good policy and practices in place in the app's business logic so that our servers would support it. So we handle the fact, like a multi-split chip, that the tip amount is for the full check amount. And then last but not least is loyalty. Our loyalty program is set up kind of like your typical grocery store one, where it's phone number driven based. But with the app, so you have to tell your server the phone number. With the app, you register it once. When you do the payment, it does it all automatically for you. And when you earn your rewards, it pushes it into your coupon pouch so that you can use them at payout. So it's a really great proposition. Here's the technology that went into that. So as you can see, we kind of went wild on that smorgasbord that we were talking about earlier. API management, huge proponent of that because we use enterprise API, cloud services. We use web API and Owen to actually host that our service layer. Notification hub, that's how we do our push notification down when your tables are ready. I amazed one of our servers one day, I explained how that works. I'm like, so when you press that button on that console, it goes to our data center, which then goes to Azure in Virginia, which then goes to your phone carrier, which then comes back down and happens like that. We use SQL Azure, specifically in a very unique way, because that's how we do our location services. That's the only part that we use to figure out what restaurants are near you. Our real storage is actually Azure Table Storage, which in my opinion is a underappreciated part of the Azure space. It's one of the oldest pieces. It's very reliable. It's incredibly cost effective. And if you're willing to live within its constraints, it's a great NoSQL solution. Blobster, Service Bus, Automation, Media Services, that's how we do the pictures for the menus. Apps Insights, that's how we track all of our bugs and problems or any telemetry. And then we use Team Services to do all of our load testing. The actual app's built all in Xamarin. It's kind of funny when they did the keynote at Evolve where they're showing the Microsoft and Azure marriage, or the Microsoft and Xamarin marriage, because they're like, and you develop in Xamarin, and you test with Test Cloud, and you deploy with Hockey App, and you back it with Azure. I'm like, we did all of that a year ago before you guys did that. So apparently we saw the writing on the wall. Then we actually integrate with all of these other systems, some of which are in Azure, some of which are third party. So you end up with kind of a diagram that looks like this. There's actually a lot more players and pieces, but this gives you the general idea. And basically, we use API management for service control gateways. We actually make our outside partners come in to that and our internal stuff. And the advantage that we get from that is that if we need to change out a service, we don't have to change our app or any of our third-party partners. As long as we hold the contract, they don't know the difference. It's a great level of abstraction. Whoops. So the approach that we did to do this is innovate quickly. So we didn't have a lot of money for this. So we took some people out of the day jobs. We stole a little money out of some projects, repurposed it for innovation. And we had two front-end developers, two back-end developers, and our goal was in 120 days, can we do a live end-to-end in a restaurant? Doesn't need to look pretty, just needs to work. So this horrible-looking piece of paper you see here, which is dated September 1st, 2014, that was our first live reservation in a restaurant. So it's kind of our token of success. Communications got after me like, why are you showing this old receipt? You need to go print a new one. I'm like, no, it's special. It's a special part of our heritage. And Microsoft helped us when we got to the end of that journey validating our architecture. We went, you know, that's great. You might want to change a few pieces here and there. So we expanded the team. We just added two developers for each front end and a couple of extra API people. So we didn't get the team like much larger than our core team that we started the proof of concept with. We were able in 6 months to go into a corporate test. So all of our corporate users could download it, use it in the Tampa market. We followed that up with a market test about 3 months later, and we were ready to go nationally at the end of 2015. The problem is that we did such a good job doing it so quickly that operations hadn't had a chance to train the restaurants. So when they actually saw how transformational it is, they were like, we need to make sure that we can deliver the guest experience to match the technology innovation that you gave. So we launched that in March. Very successful adoption. And then we expanded in summer. We actually added Carrabba's to that. So if you look at our family of apps, we have a 4.5 rating in iOS, 4.4 in Android. We won the Zami Award for best consumer app. And we had one of the biggest improvements in consumer sentiment between our old app, which we bought from a third party, and to our internally hosted app. Carrabba's is following on that success path. You might be asking yourself, well, what about Bonefish? I can't say anything about Bonefish, but you'll notice we rolled out an app in the spring, one in the summer, and it's fall. And I love that pumpkin creme brulee at Bonefish. So Azure really made that possible by giving us, you know, an opportunity to experiment, be quick and innovative, gave us the past building blocks to do that. We had scalability support so that if we were successful, which we were, we could scale the environment very easily. API management lets us change out solutions as we go. Some of our concepts have a little different technology stack, so we can do some changes and shifting without actually having to change the structure of our front-end app. And we used a lot of PaaS, so we didn't have to bring a lot of people on board to support rolling out the app. And because we planned this to only ever be in the cloud, we never had any aspirations to bring it back to the data center, we were able to take advantage of things like API management so that it was in table storage, so it was cheap to run. And it's actually one of our most reliable things in the building. We've had virtually no problems since we launched. And a lot of that is a testament to the great architecture out of the box that you get with the solutions in Azure. And the nice thing is we know that the technology world will change. So because we're built out of parts that we pay for use, if we decide that something else makes more sense, we can swap it out with having to have an uncomfortable conversation of going, well, we thought that NoSQL solution was the way to go, but it really isn't, so we need to go invest in something else. We just turn it off and change. Which kind of brings us to our next thing, which is winning on Azure. So actually, operationally, we had this great idea. This is all about the agility aspects of Azure, which was our Carrabba's brand, number one in Italian, means number one in giveaway. So our marketing team had this great idea. So Carrabba's, if you've not met, that's our Italian concept. One of the challenges in the Italian space in general is it tends to be viewed as a special occasion thing. It's where you go for your birthday, because the perception is it's heavy. So we've evolved our menu because a big part of our culture is grilled food. If you think about what we do, we grill things really well. Outback, we grill steaks. Carrabba's Italian Grill, we grill things like pork cutlets and chicken, like Chicken Brian. And Bonefish is all about grilled fish. Fleming's the same thing with premium steak. So they really challenged the menu team to come up with something that emphasizes those aspects. We introduced small plates, more grill items, and they were really excited about this, so they wanted to promote it to get people to try it. So they went, hey, why don't we give away 1 million plates of food? That'll get people excited. And you know what, let's just not give it away. We're gonna have a countdown, and we're gonna start on a specific day. And the specific day was January the 11th at 8 p.m., which, if you pull up your calendars, is the National Football Championship. So they secured CarrabbasGiveaway.com to host a special contest site. It's going to have a countdown clock to even build that anticipation. And then we're going to promote it across social and national TV buys. And we're actually going to have national TV buys during the start of the giveaway to drive traffic and excitement. So we had a roadblock purchase. If you're not aware of what that is, it's where you go and buy the same ad space across, say, 30 basic cable channels, which is what we did. So no pressure. January the 11th is the date. They get this idea the 1st of December. So not a lot of time there. Well, it's like anything else when you come up with all these wild ideas. You start figuring out before you go tell the world, you want to see if it's going to really work. So they went and talked to their marketing partners, and they got things ready. It took them about 2 weeks to go, yeah, we're going to do the thing. And had to get through finance because we're giving away a lot of food. Great hospitality, but there is cost to that food. So we get everyone's buy-in. It's the Thursday before Christmas. And we have use it or lose it PTO, so building's kind of empty around then. And they're like, okay, we got this idea, we're ready to go. And they have the forecast at this point for what the traffic is. And we hear the forecast load. It's significantly more than the high mark that we've ever tested Carrabbas.com for. So we're like, okay, that's a challenge. And the concern that we had is we do have a microsite for the contest, but we're running national ads where people are sitting, doing lots of things during commercial break, and they're gonna hear Carrabbas and giveaway. And what are they gonna do? They're gonna pull out their smartphone, they're gonna put it in search Carrabbas because it can put it in the search bar, and it's gonna send them to our corporate site. So that morning we referred to it as post-apocalypse. But fortunately, we didn't panic. We went, hey, we have Azure. We can make this work. Let's find out what we need to do. So we came up with a plan. First thing is, let's see how far Carrabbas.com can be scaled to before it breaks catastrophically. So we were able to build a full performance environment, and we run in two Azure sites, a hot and a warm. So we actually built out full failover because we wanted to test failing over in the middle of this. Because if you're ever going to fail over, this is the time it's going to happen. We developed a comprehensive set of load tests using Visual Studio Team Services. Made sure to use a different Azure location. We want that traffic over the internet. And then we also wanted to validate our CMS backsite. So that was really the thing that worried us the most. Like most modern marketing sites, we use a CMS platform. And if any of you have ever used those, they tend to still rely on relational databases. And relational databases scale to the point that they don't. So we use SQL Azure for that. So we ended up scaling up to the maximum size for that. And once we kind of came up with this approach, we sat down with our premier support team and with our Azure team and validated that our approach was good. And what we found is that we met with no problem. So we typically run 3 to 4 large instances for Carrabbas on a normal day. It's not a huge amount of load. And on holidays, we double that, usually very comfortably. For the contest, we actually ran 6 times the amount of capacity. We had 24 large instances in each data center. So we were swimming in capacity. And we had scaled our SQL Azure DB to the largest one available. So we thought we were ready, prepared. So anything that involves a countdown, you of course have to have a watch party. So at our corporate offices, we invited our Azure team, and we had the marketing team and the IT team, and everyone was excited and a little nervous. So contest lights up, we're watching the commercials go live, and as the commercials are going live, our traffic is following them. So when we hit the peak at that roadblock that they had purchased, we went at 10 times over our historic load rate. So our high water mark, we did 10 times that. Because we made sure that we wanted way more capacity than we needed, we never actually went over 20% CPU utilization. So we were way crazy big. But I'd much rather be crazy big than be embarrassed. And same with our SQL Azure DB. We did have one quick peak up to 70 when the traffic hit real fast, but immediately settled down. We never went over 40%. And then once we got past that initial night, the marketing campaign was actually designed to go for a month out. So once we ran out of the million plates, we gave away a 20% off coupon to still want people to come in, try the new menu, because that was part of the thing, is let's get you used to and liking the new items that we have. So what we did is, as we saw the traffic diminish, we just kept sizing ourselves back down until eventually we ended up at our normal size. And as a result of that, the actual cost to do it was actually very negligible. It was about $10,000 worth of extra Azure spend, which, when you consider how much we'd spend on national campaign ads and the buildup and the giveaway, it's like a rounding error. If we had to do this in the data center, there's no way we could have done it. We couldn't have bought the hardware, we couldn't have gotten the space, and then we would have been stuck with it when the campaign was over. So here's kind of a snapshot of where we were with our during the campaign. You'll see we had 30,000, it actually went higher than this, but we had 30,000 users at the same time. Cloud services barely at 20. SQL Azure in a good space. And Azure made that possible because we were able to actually produce a real performance environment that looked like what we had. We had great confidence coming in that we could handle the load because we had done it. Visual Studio Team Services, we were able to take our existing performance tests, adapt them a little bit, and run them at the scale of what we expected the contest to be to really see if it was going to work. And then when it came to the actual changes, it was a very minimal amount of changes from an administration basis. SQL Azure was the easiest. You just go, I want P6. So it was, very straightforward. And then we had Premier support there. So we felt very comfortable that if we had any challenges, that we had the right people to be able to take down the roadblocks for us. And then, this is a great example of being able to adapt with your business quickly. So in closing, here's kind of the life lessons that we've gained from Azure. And it all comes down to the three things of technology, people, and partnership. So technology, you got a great tool set. It's like a Lego block. Let the developers go crazy. You can build great things, but one of the things that is my personal opinion that Microsoft doesn't always do a great deal of, because they're interested in showing you the products and the product teams, is some of the architecture to put those into good solutions. There's good classic patterns and practices that if you go study and research on cloud patterns and just classic design patterns, you can take that knowledge and go through the catalog and do really cool, very powerful things very successfully. So pairing all that great detail knowledge that Microsoft gives you with some of those classic design patterns is very powerful. A housekeeping lifestyle check thing that we learned the hard way a couple of times is for instance style offerings, always run at least 3. Your cloud books tell you N plus 1. It's at least N plus 2. Service Fabric is now 5. So the takeaway is make sure to talk to and investigate what you need to run to meet the availability SLAs, because sometimes it's not immediately obvious. So just make sure that we have a nice experience. Whenever you're building solutions, take advantage of the Azure pricing tool to figure out, because sometimes you'll have choices where you really don't, I can implement this way or this way, both will give me the service. Sometimes there can be a big difference in cost of ownership. For us, a great example was using Service Bus versus BizTalk services. For our uses, BizTalk services was going to be overkill, and it cost significantly more. So that's, and Microsoft wants you to make good choices because then you'll use other services. So they're very helpful in that. And also, prepare for the fact that you're eventually going to have legacy cloud. We have legacy cloud. It's an interesting and weird thing to have, because the platform keeps evolving. That's how technology is. So we have things like classic cloud services that we're now trying to figure out, well, how are we going to evolve that over time? Because we know that doesn't fit into where things were evolving. So that's just part of the thing. Don't think that, legacy problems will always be around with us, because as soon as you implement a new system, the shiny new system is obsolete the next day. you know, every legacy system was once a shiny new snowflake. Then it gets down to people. It's very important that you teach your leadership teams that public clouds are not like your data center. I like to liken the difference between pets and livestock. In the data center, every server is precious and special, and that's why we guard them with our lives and we air condition them with an inch of their life. In the cloud, we have lots of copies. So if one of them drops over dead, great, we've made hamburger. We'll bring in another server. So you need to have that conversations because things like downtime, we design our solutions to handle the fact that we have rolling outages. If leadership's not aware of that mentality shift, you can find yourself having some uncomfortable conversations when, say, a maintenance window comes up during a peak holiday. You're built for it, you know you're good, but leadership's not used to that sort of experience. So you've got to make sure that you have those conversations before you get to the uncomfortable point. Because it's just different. It's a different mentality. And people in leadership roles, you know, they see the big picture. They don't understand the dynamics of the details and what the consequences of that can be to the big picture. Another thing is to reassure your administrative teams. Because one of the things that I got from one of our great administrators was, well, Azure's going to put me out of a job because you're moving all these things to the cloud. And I'm like, no, actually, your job's just going to change. Because most, you know, our administrators are already overworked as it is, and we're not hiring a bunch of new ones. So yeah, you get simplicity in administration, but we keep adding more capabilities. So more and more technology comes down the pike. So really, it's just their job evolves, and it's important to keep those good people and train them and teach them that things evolve. And leverage the knowledge and resources that Microsoft offers to train and get your people excited. If people are excited, they view it as a new adventure as opposed to something to be feared. And what you generally find is you have two different groups of people, which is you have the people who are like, yay, new thing, charge. And then you have the people who go, my data, my control, my knobs. And so it's important that you get them engaged. So they go, oh, this is different, but I have different knobs. And sometimes I don't want the knobs. And then last is partnership. Take advantage of the Microsoft resources that are available. Your product teams are, if you're doing a new initiative, they're helpful to get you some architectural guidance and things because they want you to be successful. Because if you're successful, then you'll buy more. So it's a self-beneficial circle. So don't hesitate to reach out because they want you to be successful. Because when you're successful, then you lean into that success. And then the last thing that I'm going to leave you with is Premier support. And I was a skeptic of Premier support. James will attest to that. I'm like, you want how much for this? Shouldn't you just take care of this stuff? Premier support, the best way I can describe it is the difference between a travel agent and booking all of your travel arrangements yourself. Both work. Both will get you there. But when your system is down on a Friday night, I'd much rather go to the hotline and go, I need help now. And the self-service folks, they will do a great job, but they are self-service folks. They don't know your environment because they don't deal with you every day. Trisha, my TAM, deals with my teams all the time. So if I call her and go, API management's down, a service agent's going to go, oh, we have a product that's down, I need to do a thing. In Trisha's mind, she's going, all of Blumen's public and internal systems are now offline. Oh crap, I need to get people engaged fast. And that's the magic and value of Premier Services. Well worth the cost of admission. So with that, they gave me a couple of resource slides to add in. And I know we're at the end of time, so if anyone has any questions, I'm happy to answer. And you can also shoot me questions. I'm Brian Hooper at BloominBrands.com, so no periods in the name, and I'm glad to answer. Thank you all. Have a great day.